Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Zach Applewhite, Tabletop Business Masterminds. Today I am joined by Ada from Rollspark 20, creator of Morning Mansion. Welcome.
Awesome. Hey, Zach. Nice to talk with you.
Awesome. So you've been here before, and the last time we talked, you were working on the Morning Mansion. And if I remember correctly, we were at this, I ran you through a bunch of numbers because you were like a little afraid you weren't going to fund. And you ended
Right.
up blowing it out of the water. Your funding goal was 990. You raised 2,000. All
Yeah.
right. So now that you're on the other side of things, how are you feeling?
Awesome. Honestly, super excited for the next project. Super grateful for your help with the Morning Mansion as well. Definitely helped us a lot. Definitely in terms of confidence and also in knowledge. So I was able to get my reach just a little bit further, and it surpassed all my expectations.
Awesome. So let's just talk about before we get into the next project, let's go over the last project. How was it? It was your first Kickstarter, first micro Kickstarter. All right. And I'm not sure how the conversion works out, but 990 in Canadian, where that is in the US, but that seems like it would be a little of a heftier micro as far as micros go. And still, you did great with it. So how was it shooting for like a little bit of a heavier goal? Have you gone through fulfillment? How was the promotion? Just like walk me through everything you can remember that like you struggled with, you overcame, or you kept struggling with, just whatever comes to mind.
A lot of emotional turmoil,
Yeah.
for sure. First project was incredibly nerve-wracking. I'm very happy looking back with how everything rolled out in the long run. Could have gone better, but also could have gone a lot worse. I think possibly my biggest regret with the project was rushing the Kickstarter because, as a horror game, I really wanted to hit that Halloween kind of niche of
Yeah.
games where people are looking for something a little bit more spooky. So I didn't give myself any more than a week to advertise pre-launch. So not very much time. It still worked out okay. But it took me a little while to hit that funding goal. I had about a 2 week funding period and didn't end up funding until about a week in. It was at that point that things actually started to really pick up. People saw that it was a successful project and they wanted to be a part of it and help it go further. So that's when the stretch goals really kicked in, and I set some stretch goals that I did not see myself ever reaching. And by the time the Kickstarter ended, I'd blown hundreds of dollars past the last stretched goal in this micro Kickstarter. So in the long run, that went pretty smoothly, all things considered. I have since completed fulfillment with the project. It was digital only, so it was pretty easy to get everyone sorted with Google Drive. Unfortunately, I could have made the process a bit easier for people, and a lot of people provided me an email that they didn't use for their Google. So then I had to end up talking to about 15 of my 70 backers and be like, hey, how can I help you access your content? Okay, you need this different email. Okay, did that work? Great. Hope you enjoy. And I did do a survey to try and collect feedback on the module, but I think I posted the survey a little bit too soon. I don't think anybody had actually gone through the content yet, so I haven't received any responses, but I have a plan to follow up.
Yeah. Awesome. So, a question, because one, I'm just like very happy that you seem to have followed a lot of the core tenets of the micro Kickstarter strategy. Right? And I want to ask, so, and I know you also did this in partnership. What was, so you only had 1 week of promotion basically
Yes.
before the launch of the Kickstarter, and what social following, if any, did you have going into this?
So, going into this, obviously I had a personal network of friends and family and a lot of personal connections in the community, which helps fund a fair bit of it, especially in the first portion. But in terms of social media following, I had an Instagram with about 70 followers on it. So most of my project discovery was Kickstarter itself helped a lot. And then secondary was probably Instagram ads. I did promote on Reddit communities as well, but I saw very little turnover from that. Maybe two or three backers at most.
Got you. Did you use trackable links, or were you just trusting Kickstarter's, like, here's where this backer came from in the dashboard?
I used Kickstarter's trackable links.
Gotcha.
Where Kickstarter will provide you different links. So I had one link for Reddit, one link for Discord, one link for my Instagram ads, for example.
Nice.
So then, Kickstarter kind of broke it down a little bit for me.
Yeah.
But I found those trackable links weren't the most reliable. So in the future, I think I'd love to find another way to kind of funnel that through for better analytics that I can build off of.
There's a complicated kind of thing. Like, you can work with pixels. I personally avoid them because I've had more trouble setting up. I've spent hours trying to just get things right on like a Google Pixel or a Facebook Pixel. One thing I can recommend to you off the bat is like Bitly, which you can get a certain amount free. The only downside is like you have to pay if you want to keep the data for a while. All right. But you can always screenshot that. You can always store that data elsewhere. Two is that if you want to do more than I think it's 5 or 10 links, you have to pay them. But other than that, you get everything. You get it all for free, and you can check the clicks, but you won't be able to check probably the conversions. All right. And that's where Kickstarter does do an okay job. Kickstarter always overshoots its own value whenever it's giving you its data.
I noticed that.
So like always take big like 20% grain of salt, you know, with Kickstarter. But that's awesome. So the baseline being is like you had a few friends, you had a very small social reach, you know, with 70 followers on Instagram. And so you probably, that's like 1 or 2 or 5, 10, you know, maximum probably 15 that
yeah.
way. And I don't know how your ads performed, but you ended up with 70 backers. And I do think that getting where the Morning Mansion and it being spelled for anyone listening, MOURNING, like I'm in morning, not good morning, you know, it's just that funny wordplay. And you launched it from September 20th to October 11th and then fulfilled quickly digitally. I do think that that worked in your favor. All right. I don't want you to beat up on yourself because you did churn it out really quickly and didn't give yourself a lot of time to advertise it. But at the end of the day, you had the entire time it's running to advertise it.
Yeah.
And because you timed it the way you did, I do think you landed backers you otherwise wouldn't have if you had just gotten through the Halloween season.
Yes.
You know, so I think you should give yourself a little more credit.
Thank you.
The other thing is that for Google Drive, I do love that. And I love that you did it digitally because that's so easy for everybody. It means you worked entirely out of profit minus whatever you spent on ads, whatever cut you gave to your collaborators. Google Drive is good. You can also give them a Google link in messaging. I've done that before. Just kind of anyone who struggles, you can, instead of emailing it to them, do it straight through the messenger. The other one you could look into, I want to say it's Book Funnel. Let me look it up real quick. It's that, or it's not Book Funnel. It is something else, but I will find it for you and send that to you. If I don't find it during this chat, I'll send it to you afterwards.
I think you mentioned it last time, but I didn't have time to properly look into it.
Yeah, that's one that's also, it'll tell you like exactly how many people download the material, which is also good for me. You can even tell if someone's sharing it around. which isn't necessarily a bad thing. For example, you might share things as a dungeon master with all your players.
Yeah.
And for some people, and I've said this before, for some people, when they buy it for its price, understanding that they're going to share it. Just like if I buy the Dungeon Master's Guide and it's on my shelf, I might loan that to my friend for a while to look over, you know, so that they don't have to go through the expense, and they might lend me their Monster Manual or Tasha's Cauldron that they were able to get earlier, whatever, you know, that is part of it. That's not, to me, stealing.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that's just part of the consumer economy. But you get to see that with the one that, as soon as I find it, I will let you know. So now you've done all that. All right. What are your main takeaways? The things that you're like, well, I'm doing that again for sure. This worked great. And well, I'm never doing that again. That was a mistake.
I think the micro Kickstarter strategy and having primarily digital fulfillment were both big hits for me. It's a great strategy. I was able to have a high turnaround and a high profit for, in the long run, only about 5 weeks of intense work. And then it made fulfillment a lot easier as well. I think those would be some of my main takeaways, as well as working with other creators who will contribute to the project and help promote the project's reach. Mm-hmm. I think that was a big one for me. My collaborator had a much larger audience than I did, and they had some of their Patreon members message me that they were backing the project, which was super appreciated.
That's always really nice. Collaborations can be really beneficial, sometimes difficult, but the end result is usually, if it makes it through the collaboration, it's usually better than it would have been if it was just you.
100%. Everyone's got a unique something to add, right?
Yeah. So what was there anything that you were just like, well, that was a mistake and I'm never doing that again?
To be honest, the only thing, and it's a very small thing, was probably the fulfillment process, wanting to make some changes there. Mm-hmm. Because I had such a large percentage of the backers having difficulties with it. I think that in the future, I'd love to simplify that process so it's as hands-off for the backer as possible. Instead of them having to get their own information in line in order to be able to access the project, just having a link for them that they can click the link and boom, there they have everything, regardless of account, etc.
Which is great that you bring that up, because I just found it, the one I was talking about. Story Origin.
Story Origin.
Story Origin. All right. Or Story Origin app. I found this actually because of my wife's books. And mm-hmm. so that what they were really good at is that they can allow you to download it for whatever device you read on. All right. So that if you need it as a EPUB file, if you're looking at it on your Nook or whatever, your iPad versus Android, and whatever app you're doing it in, if there's any struggle, you as the creator can actually point them to Story Origin's help desk.
Mm.
Say, okay, here's where you can go to troubleshoot. Here's their help thing. See, or here's the article for how to get it on iPad. What's your device? Here's the instructions, instead of me having to give you the instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I really fell in love with it. And then I found out that you could also track what your downloads were looking like. It made it really easy to do a lot of other things that I don't use it for, you know, like giveaways.
Right.
But that's one that I think is not well known enough. But most people just end up using Google Drive for digital because it's really easy on the user and you don't have to learn anything new. And everyone trusts Google, whether it's good or not. You know, like, everyone One, trusts Google, so you feel okay creating an account on it, even if you've never created a Google Drive account. Whereas Story Origin, the only thing that they have that a user has to validate it is you. And for some people, that's not enough. You know, that just adds a little bit sketch, especially if there's new backers. But the good news for micro Kickstarters is that most of them aren't new backers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of them are serial backers who are looking for, who are shopping around for cool stuff from cool people. You know,
right.
So most of them, I've never had a problem with Story Origin. Now, so we've gone over all that. Let's talk about the next thing.
Okay.
Working on.
So, two things in mind. One smaller project. I'm hoping to do a kind of a relaunch of the same project, the Morning Mansion, this fall. Take the existing project, relaunch it as a downloadable item for the public on an online shop, and micro Kickstarter a print edition of it.
Okay. So now, when you say you're launching, you're wanting to launch it on a separate store, online storefront.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. Not as a Kickstarter, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Got you. All right. And then, so that's the first thing. And I just want to make sure I don't tangent on one thing if the other thing is really important. So you're going to relaunch that. You said like in August.
I'll be working on it then, probably aiming for that same Halloween niche again, but more prepared this time.
Right. Yeah. And then what's the second thing?
The second thing, is kind of a broader project in terms of where myself as a creator wants to go in terms of the community. I have a really cool project idea that I've been working on for a little bit of time now. I've been doing some research and talking with other creators that I wanted to go over with you, especially in terms of doing two separate launches for it, and building a creator community behind it.
Gotcha. What do you want to talk about first? Do you want to go over the relaunch real quick and then get to the big project, or do you want to handle the big project first?
Just a quick touch on the relaunch would be awesome.
Okay, cool. So I will say that at least, and you know, you can expand on anything you're worried about. I'll say that generally speaking, the aftermarket for Kickstarters is the same market everyone else is in, and it's rough. Okay. So where do you plan to like hold this item for sale online?
That's one of the biggest questions right now. Originally, I was going to put it up on the Patreon shop because trusted platform. Some of my Kickstarter backers have already been redirected there, and ease of download for people. But there's a lot of cons to that as well, especially because I don't really have a presence on Patreon, and I'm not really planning to ever have a consistent presence on Patreon. It would be almost exclusively for this product, which I don't think would look very good in the long run. So the option I'm leaning towards is hosting it on my own website, but then I worry about consumer trust.
Mm-hmm. So here's what, and I normally wouldn't give this advice, okay? But here's what I actually think would work for you. Because, by the way, we do this, we have, after we did like five of the micro Kickstarters, we launched our own website and we put our stuff up for sale there. And I generally, the way that I approach most people is because I run from a very, how do I get the most out of what effort and capacity I have?
Mm-hmm.
The amount of effort and capacity it takes to have reoccurring online sales is nuts. Okay. It is much easier because one, it's a grind of like constantly trying to tell people, hey, go buy this thing. Hey, go buy this thing. Hey, go buy this thing. Okay. We have found time and time again, personally, that having your Morning Mansions as an add-on to your next project if it's all related, makes you way more money. All right, all at once, it helps you get funded faster and all that. If it's completely unrelated, so let's say that you were going to create a plushie of something, you know, of a Powerpuff Girl. That's unrelated, right? Utterly has nothing to do with it. Doesn't make sense for an add-on. It does make sense in that case to have a place to say, like, look, if you like the creator, maybe you'll like their other stuff. Here's a place to go. The reason I would actually recommend, and what I'm going to recommend to you, is the Patreon shop. All right. And here's a couple of reasons why. One is purely cost. You're probably not going to make more than like 5 sales. Okay. And that's just on it. Like, you might put in the work and prove me wrong. By all means, prove me wrong. Okay. But it's going to cost upfront over $100 just to set up the website. All right.
Right.
If you want to sell on a website, they always make you pay more. You're going to want your own domain so that you're not using something like rollspark.weebly.com.
Yeah.
You know, because that never looks, and that only adds to the sketch. All right. Two, you don't have a like huge Patreon presence right now, but you have more than zero, which is what a website puts you at.
Right.
People do trust Patreon. They are willing to put money through there. Patreon, I'm sure, will take a cut, but so will the card provider of any e-commerce site you put together. So the e-commerce side of things only makes sense if A, you have the ability or the tenacity to drive traffic to it on a regular basis, and two, if you have either A, one or two really in demand products, okay, like so you've done something viral, your TikTok went crazy, something, okay, which isn't where you're at right now, cool, or you have a bigger line of products. The only reason my wife and I still have our website up, because we've made a couple dollars here and there. It's probably it's under 100 for the year. Okay. Except that the only thing it's been really good for, we use Shopify and we sell books in person at events for my wife. And that's where it's been useful for us. That's where it's been worth every penny, because we got a little, it's not Square, it's something else it connects to. They gave us a card reader. We just put it like we have an online store. Everything can be bought, and it makes everything easier.
Okay. Yeah, complete.
If you're doing things in person and you think you're going to do that within this year or two, you could consider doing something like a Shopify. If you don't particularly plan to do that, all right, then I would just go with the Patreon thing. It might help you grow that presence. It does give an opportunity for you to point people to something and show a record of work, you know, and you can put anything you want in there to make it a quote Patreon exclusive.
Yes.
You know, and so normally I would recommend probably most people actually don't need an e-commerce website. They're going to end up spending more money than they're making. B, I usually recommend though that people, if they're going to have their own website, because they don't want to put all of their eggs in a basket when some Elon Musk of the world could buy out Patreon and screw it over. Or Patreon says, we need to please this shareholder, so we need to do what Etsy did. We need to screw over the people that built us, all right, and take more of their money. And now it's no longer a profitable place to be. That still can happen to you.
Yeah. But
right now you're at a stage where that's not really going to hurt you.
Low risk,
you know, because you only have the one product and your presence on there is already minimal. It's really, really hard to build a website that matters to people, you know, and that they feel comfortable shopping at. And you will probably get there if you keep on the stage that you're going, but that will probably take a few years, you know. And then if there's ever a point where you do plan to sell in person, all right, at more than a couple of events, that's what I would consider. Get a website, set it all up, and have it clean, have it so that it can give you an opportunity for passive income, plug it from time to time. But overall, from time to time again, what really does drive the sales on our end is just making the next product.
Yeah.
You know?
Everybody always likes something new.
Right. It drives new attention. And then if there's ever a time, like for example, we have my wife and her books have nothing to do with D&D. But they, people who find her interesting can learn about her, learn about Applewhite Games, can go to the website, and if they have that intersection of I like Caitlin's books and I like Dungeons and Dragons and I'm in the market for this, which is a rare connection, all right, they have the opportunity to give us more money.
Yeah, it's there, which is better than it not being there.
Which is better than it not being there. It barely covers the cost of operation, if that. Okay. Far and away, the in-person sales of her books is what really makes the website worth it.
Right.
So does that answer? Was I helpful that for that moment?
I think so, yes. Question in terms of getting, because I'm assuming Caitlin's books are physically printed as well.
Yes.
Any quick advice in terms of that? Can we touch base on that for just a minute?
Yeah, absolutely. So one is don't be afraid to work local. Okay. So we, for the special editions, actually worked with a French company. All right. And the language barrier was a little bit of trouble there, which made their customer service a little bit of trouble. The real trouble was that not all of the books, some of the books came out perfect. All right. Some of them came out imperfect, particularly on the binding. Okay, this is a foreign company. All right, so now there's international trade issues if we want to kind of pursue a way to resolve this. All right, in best case scenario, if their customer service was fantastic and they said, oh no, we are sorry, we will fix this for you and immediately send you new books, it would still take over a month to get to us because they're overseas. So if you can work within the local sphere, all right, that is something worth looking into. We are now, for our special editions, going to work with a place that we can drive to. It's less than an hour away. That
That's
way,
awesome.
mad, we can tell them in person. All right. The other thing is though that if that option doesn't exist for you, okay. There's a lot of other things that you can look into. I first started with BookBaby. They did okay for me. I forget the one that Kaylin has been using for her just paperbacks, but eventually it did become more economic to actually use the Kindle Direct Publishing, where, or you, not Kindle Direct Publishing, but the Amazon Publishing. And
Oh,
bring her
really?
books straight from Amazon.
Okay.
So that is something that you can look into. It is not something that I set up, so I can't give you all the gritty details, but there's a lot of resources out there. YouTube is your friend, okay? For you set up your book on Amazon, you sell it for paperback. There's some hoops you have to jump through. You will want to get a copyright on it. You can buy those in bulk, by the way. Never buy them in singles. Be willing to shell out the little bit of extra money to buy like 10 of them. And by copyrights, I'm actually talking, I messed things up. Copyrights, you can buy one at a time, or you can just put the copyright symbol and you're about as protected. Because if people really want to steal from you, they will. And neither of us can afford a lawyer to defend a copyright. So why put one on there when you're innately protected, at least under American law? The one I was talking about was ISBNs. You'll need to buy an ISBN number. All right. You do not want to use the ISBN that Amazon provides for you. Okay. Because then you cannot, if you print off of Amazon using the ISBN they provide for you, every book that comes out with that ISBN, you cannot sell in store. All right. One of the things that we've done is we've approached local bookstores and even we've got her into a Barnes and Noble. Okay.
That's awesome.
Because we own the ISBN. All right. And if it's an Amazon ISBN, the bookstores cannot touch it for whatever reason. So you want your own ISBN. You can buy those in bulk. And that's important because sometimes you're going to need a different ISBN for the physical versus the digital. All right. And possibly even like versus an audiobook if you did it that way. All right. It's always good to have a spare ISBN lying around, and I believe you can buy them in batches of 10 or 12. Kalen and I have actually accidentally bought two batches of 10 because we each bought one. She was like, oh, I need an extra ISBN. Zach gave me this one. I'll go buy another batch. I'd already bought a batch. So now we're sitting here with like 17 extra ISBNs. That's fine. She plans to make a lot more books. You know, point being, there's a lot of options out there. It is becoming cheaper to work with Amazon, but there's hoops to go through that if it's not worth it to you, it's not worth it. And Amazon is right now very overflooded. You're not going to just put a book on Amazon and make a bunch of money. All right. So if it's easier for you to just print it yourself and not worry about it, then that's worth it to you. You know, always get a test copy.
Yes. And
what you want to look for the test copy is how is everything aligning? Okay. Are it when you look at the back, is there a good amount of space between the text, the middle text on each side? Does your image look good when you open it up? How does it open? All right. And where is the text sitting on the page?
Yeah.
When you read the text, do your eyes hurt? Did they print the font poorly? All right. That's the kind of thing that matters most. And then there's always going to be from printer to printer a difference in color. All right.
Yeah.
No matter what, they're just going to use a slightly different dot. Okay. That's normal. That's not a printer being bad. That's the printer being that printer. Right. And so we've definitely seen that going from one to another. And it's just something you have to live with. All right. And if you really don't like it, talk to them and say, please help me.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and then hopefully some of them have terrible, awful customer service. All right. And some of them are really like exceptionally helpful. You know, it's kind of a crapshoot. It's really a matter of like, does the person there enjoy their job? Are they doing what they want to be?
Goodness. Yeah.
Some of them aren't, and it shows.
Gotcha. Okay. Have you ever heard of Lulu?
Yes, that's the one. That's the one Kalen's been using for a while. So we can trust them.
Okay. Right. Lovely.
They've done well for us. And again, always get the test copy. And really, that's it. I don't have much else to add to that unless you want to talk selling in person.
I did actually get a test copy of my book from Lulu.
Awesome.
Lovely. I did notice that it already had an ISBN in it.
That's probably just a test ISBN to show you how it would appear on the book.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I think it's Bowker. I'm going to check this right now. All right. I'll probably find it if I just put in ISBN. I think it's Bowker. Yep. All right. And you want to buy directly from Bowker.
Okay. I've got it right
There's
here.
There's a lot of brokers out there who are just middlemen.
Yeah.
Who are just there to take your money. All right. Trying to find you the exact. I'm just going to send you.
I think I've got it here. Is it myidentifiers.com?
Actually, no. Let me see here.
Yeah, if you could send me that.
United States.
Love that.
With barcode. You'll need to poke around a little bit. Where do you, because they also have like an ISBN Australia. And I noticed you were working in Canadian dollars. So I don't know if
Yes. Yeah.
That might be something you want to look into further because I only have the US perspective, but I am right now sending it to you. It is www.bowker.com. All right. Okay. And it also has like an ISBN and mine says -US. So that's probably local based.
Right.
Don't, and you, so this is the part where you might just need to ask Reddit or Google, will a US ISBN work in Canada? I feel like it should, you know, but I don't know.
Gotcha.
And so I've sent that to you, but that is definitely something that you should talk to other people about, especially people in Canada, you know, to figure out if there's any weirdness there that I'm unaware of.
Gotcha. Thanks for the advice. And I just want to show you, I actually have the book right here.
Oh, that looks beautiful.
Super awesome. I got it in a nice hard
cover. How did the images come out? That's always been my worry with TTRPG materials. Printing with things like Lulu. Yeah.
My the only problem I did was I should have done a much higher DPI. So the images, if you look closely, you can see the pixels. But the pixels themselves are really sharp, which tells me that the printing quality is good. It's on my end.
Well, and that's in order as many test copies as you need to be happy.
Yeah.
At some point, you do have to just say good enough and ship it, because you're always going to look at what you created and see its flaws. Well, I guess that's not true. Some people are blind idiots, all right, and refuse to see the flaws in what they've created, all right? But I feel like in the TTRPG space, we're very critical people, and we're very willing to look and see where the flaws lie.
And talk about it.
We hyper-focus, and we think that this flaw is just, like, who couldn't see this flaw? It's gaping, and everyone will think that I am a hack. When in fact, most people are just like, oh, cool.
It's a cool book.
TTRPG. Pretty pictures. Let's go. Where's the charts?
So true. You know? Oh, goodness. Yes.
Also, no matter what, there will be that one anal person who will tear everything you create apart. They're destined to be unhappy. That is their purpose in life. You cannot please that person. We run into those people from time to time. And our products just aren't for them. No one's products really are. That's the point of their existence in this moment. All right. We feel bad for them, and then we move on.
Yes. Do you have, specifically, since you work with Lulu on micro Kickstarters, do you have experience with their bulk fulfillment for crowdfunding projects?
I have not. Because one, we care very deeply about packaging. It's one of the few areas where we can stand out above everybody else. Okay? Because everyone can print a book on Lulu. Okay?
Yeah.
If they put in the time and they put in a little bit of cash, everyone can print a book on Lulu. What they can't do, and this is where we go extra. Okay? This is an option. All right? It is not a must. That Kaylin, for the first Kickstarter, wrapped everything in like brown paper wrapping, twine, and a wax seal.
Okay. Ah.
Now, we had 200 freaking backers, so we're not doing that again. Okay. Now, that's premium packaging that people can pay $3 for. Okay. But the point being is that that's an area where we can stand out with your book. Also, because it's a bigger book, you have this opportunity. You can throw inserts in there. You can direct them to your Patreon. All right. So if you do work with Lulu, I would look into see what are their packaging options. Find the one that works for you. See if they can do something like inserts. Some fulfillment centers can. You know, some fulfillment centers, it's nope. We get shoved in bubble wrap, thrown in a box, and sent out into the world. Good luck, Johnny. All right. Some of them are more, oh yeah, we'll take like 7 pieces. It'll just cost you 13 cents extra per piece or something.
Right.
You know, so I can't speak to the fulfillment center, but definitely look at the cost and then think about what kind of stuff you might want to put in there. In addition, whether that's a sticker or a handwritten note or a flyer to direct them or with a barcode to a survey, whatever. You know,
right.
That's what I would look into.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Do you mind if we switch topics for a
Absolutely.
little bit then?
Yeah, let's go.
So, in terms of the future of myself as a creator, I want to, of course, continue to write my own books, do my own crowdfunding, exist as an independent author. So I've decided I'm going to lean more into making it a personal brand. So Aiden Hawk wrote this book instead of Roll Spark wrote this book. But I've been thinking a lot about the Roll Spark and how I want that to exist. And it's a bit of a new realm from the research I've been doing. But I'm envisioning a bit more of a collaborative branding project. I wanted to run this by you and see if you have any initial thoughts. I don't think we'll have enough time to cover everything tonight. I'd be happy to do a follow-up if that's something you'd be interested in. So the idea with Roll Spark, I'm rebranding it as Roll Spark Project, would be that it would be a sort of collaborative member-based project for up-and-coming creators in the TTRPG space specifically. So, people like you, yourself, and myself, for example, there would of course be an administration group, but the idea is basically the project exists to foster growth and collaboration between TTRPG creators by providing resources to creators that will help them elevate their projects, providing services to creators such as design and layout services, on probably a smaller basis, and possibly. The main idea of the project would be a sort of cross promotion where every member of the Roll Spark project, while publishing their projects individually and retaining their abilities as independent authors, would also be able to publish it as part of the Roll Spark project. The Roll Spark project would then promote their projects, along with the projects of the other members of the project, allowing for a sort of shared audience rather than each creator struggling amongst hundreds of other individual creators to try and set themselves apart. Members of the general public would come across the Roll Spark project and see a unified collective of higher quality individual tabletop role-playing game creators and be able to source an abundance of great content from a whole bunch of content creators who they can trust through the Roll Spark brand and the fact that there are a whole bunch of them working together.
Got you. Okay. So one big project. Okay.
Yes.
I think that there is, so I do have a lot of initial thoughts.
Of
Okay.
course. It's a big concept.
Right. One is that this is good news, but so the good news is I don't have anyone in mind who's already doing this. Okay. So the good news is that there's no one who's top of mind for me, and I'm relatively moving and shaking within the TTRPG. All right. But there's a lot of people who try a lot of things and are really bad at promoting it. So there might be those kind of communities already out there trying to do this kind of thing. Okay. I think that I do something kind of similarly, but I do it at a much lighter level. All right. With Tabletop Business Masterminds. And what you seem to be wanting to do is something that is much more holistic, much more scaled up. All right. Which, hey, go for it. All right. All right. Here's my initial thoughts, and they don't all agree with each other. Okay.
Totally
So
get that.
kind of take what you will. Number one is that instead of trying to build the whole thing, just find the thing that people need the most. Okay. So, for example, I am currently writing a book on micro Kickstarters. I would not have known to write a book on micro Kickstarters if I hadn't done a series of webinars and measured people's responses. I found that people did like industry updates using search engine optimization for TTRPG. They really like hearing about content marketing, but there's a lot of material about content marketing out there. All right. And while they think branding might be important, they're not sure how it helps them. And it's a really hard sell. All right. However, people went absolutely feral for micro Kickstarter. They really interested, and I had never seen people sign up so quickly. All right. So one of the things I'm trying to build for myself as a creator is basically it would be my dream to just talk to people all day, to just go on a stage and talk to people, to do this all day and get paid for it, sell books as part of a revenue stream, run a booth and talk to people that way. I like helping people. I like talking about things that interest me. Okay. I'm a stereotypical straight white dude. Okay. Just want to hear my own voice. All right. So the way that I build toward that though, is by starting with what people really, really care about instead of just what I care about. And so to really help people, I needed to try a bunch of things, ask a lot of questions, and see where it really mattered. So for example, you might find out that for the services or the resources, the design and layout is a huge problem. And so you say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get a panel of three design and layout professionals, all right, and host a webinar. That's cheap, easy, gives you a collaboration with three creators, all right? You might invite 10 and just see who takes it, you know, even if it's just one person, all right? Two, you're starting to build an email list as people sign up for the webinar, people that you can convert to the larger projects as you continue to build. All right. And you're starting to make a name for yourself as someone who creates events within the industry and cares about creators within the industry. Okay. And then I would try that with 2 to 5 other things. You know, maybe it's not design and layout. Maybe it's how to hire an artist. I think artists would love someone to give them a platform to say, here's how to work with us.
Mm-hmm.
My price is my price. A webinar. Okay. You know. All right. So how to find artists, how to work with artists. All right. That is something that helps both sides. You become connected to both sides. And you'll find out that maybe people just want to use AI art. And that's another one. You can do a lot of webinars on how is AI affecting intersector of the TTRPG industry, the writers, the designers, the artists, the players, the dungeon masters, okay? Everybody, all right? And that will tell you what's really mattering to people. You'll find out where your foothold is, you know? And it might surprise you where that is. Also, I'm like thinking map makers. So I guess first thing is, write out all the sectors within the TTRPG industry.
Yeah. Okay?
Like, probably the easiest way is to start with the people that work with online things like map makers, like designers, virtual tabletop, all that. But there's also a ton of accessories within the D&D space. Keys and dice, and go on Etsy, type in D&D, and you'll find things you never knew existed. Okay. So there's a lot of sectors that you can go into. Start with what interests you or what you think you already have a foothold in. Use that to prop up the next thing and the next thing. And I think that you're going to find out where the need is and build from there. Okay. That's the first idea. The second idea is that you talked about kind of like allowing people to buy from a collection of creators, all right, and experience in that kind of cross promotion, right? There is a way people are doing that All right. And they're able to do it like you're talking about, just come out completely out of nowhere. Hi, you don't know me, but, and that's charity. Okay. So pick a charity that you believe in. All right. Let's say it's Planned Parenthood. All right. Or let's say you're raising money for your local library to buy more D&D books. Okay. Or something. Okay. And then you reach out to the creators you know, and you might ask them, hey, do you have any other creators you think might be interested? That expands your network, and you're not just expanding it by cold calling, you're having an introduction. But also, TTRPG people generally, because they're so small, they're open to cold calling. All right. So you can also kind of pick, and I'm not saying pick people from like Dimension 20, all right, and people in like Critical Role. I'm saying like pick people within your reach, all right, creators you've already interacted with, even if it's just passively on Twitter, all right, or wherever you prefer, or Instagram or wherever, all right, and say, hey, I'm running this charity in March, and we're looking for materials that people can contribute. All right, people will buy a basket of materials, have an option to donate more in addition to that. And we're going to have a kind of fundraising goal. You'll also be listed among the people, you'll have links, and you might do this the first time and just make it that simple. And the second time, offer a webinar series. You know, everyone who donates to the charity gets to attend the webinar. Now, also, by the way, what you've done there, you've gotten people used to paying for your webinars. Okay.
That's
I just gave myself an idea.
a good one.
Right. You've by the sheer goodwill of the positive thing you're putting into the world, you have also A, created a big networking opportunity, a lot of positive brand for both you and as the host and everyone who is involved. All right. You've also gotten people used to exchanging money in receipt for a product in connection to yours and everyone else's name. All right. Do that enough times, and people are going to become really comfortable with you. All right.
Yes.
Of course, this is a lot of work. All right. And naturally, as someone who I have a lot of responsibilities, and I look at the amount of work that this would take, and I say, great. So I will have this done in 20 years. All right. You know, because I will build this one microscopic level at a time. All right. You will probably need to make bigger moves sooner. All right. You will probably, if you want to make this into something that is something you can really hang your hat on in the next 10 years, you know, you're probably going to need to be doing a webinar a quarter, two to four charities a year. You know, you're going to need to start creating a very big library. Always start for low cost or free. All right. And many people, especially when you're doing the charity thing, is like, it costs money right now. This will also be for free for everyone at this location, giving them a location to go to. All right. And at this point, you would want a website, you know, or you make yourself like an affiliate and say, hey, we will host your individual product as well on our site. And I personally would hate doing this because I just don't want to figure it out. You might be willing to figure it out. We'll give you X percentage of each sale, or we'll take X percentage of each sale. What are you comfortable with? Here's the range. That personally is like when I do collaborations. All right. I say we split things completely evenly after the Kickstarter, and then we all own it completely equally so that if I sell it for $10, I keep my $10. If you sell it for $100, you keep your $100. If you take the thing we create and you become a millionaire and you run off to Paris, send me a postcard, you owe me nothing. Okay? I would rather do that than owe you anything, than have to check my records for 14 cents that I owe you because the thing we created sold on my website and you have a 14% ownership of the $1 item. You know, however, you will almost definitely have to do that at some level for what you're wanting to create, because you're kind of putting yourself in this middleman position who says, You're looking for someone. I know someone. I vetted them. I trust them. They're a creator. Here's their profile. Come spend your money here. I get a cut. All right. Because I help set that person up with new business. Model's been done a million times, and it is an innate part of the business. So it might be good for you to also think about how to learn to do that at the micro level. So that if you mess up, you're not messing up with thousands of dollars. You're messing up with tens of dollars.
Yes.
Know? And so that, so no one's going to sue you over it. And if they great, have 14 more dollars, it's small. And you learned your lesson. You readjust whatever went wrong there. And then when you're ready to move forward with something bigger, you know what you're doing. So that was a lot that I just spit at you. So now it's your turn. What are your thoughts or questions?
Okay. So many thoughts and questions. I've been working on this idea for 2 months now already. And I have started by branching out, and I think you saw putting out a survey to try and gather information about the creator community. With the intention of using that information to help found my next steps as I head towards this process.
Which, by the way, that brings up an excellent point. One, I love that you did that. I thought it was very smart, and I thought it was very interesting. Okay. Two is that is a way to get creators interested, potentially, is by saying, here's an industry nude. So I forget the name of it, but I think it's called the Blacklist. All right. And the Blacklist is a Hollywood creation. All right. Someone was a script writer for a production company. And the weird thing about scripts is that the same script will pass through the same 40 production companies that matter. All right. And everyone's trying to figure out what's the hot script. And sometimes production companies will end up fighting over the same script. Okay.
Right.
So what this one scriptwriter did was he emailed all the friends he had from those 40 other production companies and said, hey, you work in this production company. I work in this production company. What are the top 10 scripts your company is looking at? All right. And he put those in an Excel file, basically, found the ones that were the most duplicate, what was everyone agreeing on? This is a top script. Okay. Had the top, I think it was 20 list, dropped everything else in a bucket and says, not everyone's in agreement. Now he has the list of everything everyone agrees is gold. And he gave that back to everyone who contributed it to it. Then he sold it to all of Hollywood, because now all of Hollywood knows what the hot scripts are, and they're willing to pay anything to find out that kind of information. Now, the TTRPG industry is not Hollywood, doesn't have that kind of money, but the same effect applies. Okay, that if you say, hey, all the creators fill out this survey, just like you did, if you fill out the survey, you get to know the results of the survey. As long as that thing is valuable, okay, like what are you investing in? What is the big trend you see? Are you going to be creating zombies, westerns, whatever? What convention are you going to? Okay, give me every convention you're going to go to. And you might find out that, like, hey, people aren't going to Gen Con this year nearly as much as they were last year. They're going to PAX. All right. If I'm a creator, I love to know that information. Okay. If I'm a convention goer, because that tells me that I need to go to PAX and I might not need to spend as much at Gen Con. You know, that's going to take a little bit of creative work to find out what kind of information really is valuable. Okay, because it's not like the script industry where there's this one metric that everyone cares a lot about. It's entire people's careers. All right. But something like, are you using AI? How much are you using AI? What are you using it for? finding important things within the industry, and of course offering it for free, at least for a while. All right, because again, it's not Hollywood, people don't have money to spend, but now you've become a thought leader. Now you've become a gatekeeper to information. The Blacklist thing got so big that the guy who was the script guy was on a call with people who were pitching scripts to him for his production company and saying, by the way, you didn't hear this from me, but I heard it's going to be on the Blacklist next year. I made the Blacklist and you're full of shit.
Oh my gosh.
That's not how it works. This isn't the Emmys. There's not a secret Illuminati committee deciding what the big scripts are. All right. I don't care if you think Channing Tatum is perfect for this. All right. That's just fun business case study stuff.
Yeah. The
point being is that information is powerful, it's valuable, and connecting yourself and being the central person for it is also an opportunity to grow that kind of information. And anytime you can pull that together and say, hey, consumers, how much do you worry about AI when buying? I, as a creator, want to know, how much does the consumer worry about AI when buying? That's huge. All right. And by the way, are you worried about it where? In the art? In the writing? That affects every sector. So if you get your hands on enough consumers, all right, I think that in order to make the survey results valuable, it needs to be at least 100 to even be interesting. And then, of course, and I don't know what the arbitrary number is, because humans love arbitrary numbers. We're like, well, that TikTok isn't really a viral video until it hits 2,400 views. I don't know why we make up numbers in our head. Okay. But you might be able to find that. You might be able to capitalize on that. And you might be able to start putting yourself as someone who is a real resource, so that was just a thought. Sorry for the tangent. That was
no, I love it. I'm here to listen and learn. So I super.
Well, as super you discuss, I like to hear myself talk. But, what else was on your mind? And let's say we only got 10, maybe 15 minutes left here.
Yes. With that in mind, I think one thing on my mind to get into nitty gritties, if I'm looking forward into building a community and a brand sort of from scratch, considering I'm taking what I've made so far, I'm making that more personal, and then I'm starting Roll Spark on the side.
Yeah.
What would be the best social media platforms from your experience that you find the TTRPG community really engages with?
So I would say one, and this is just like with content creation, is start where you're comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're really comfortable on Reddit, I struggle with Reddit, but that is definitely a place where TTRPG people are.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle night and day, top and bottom, cannot figure out Instagram. Okay, but if that's where you have people, that might be an opportunity. Personally, I feel like the best places to actually build a community are places where you can kind of put them all in one room and talk to them. That's why I really like Discord. Okay, the problem is with Discord is that it's basically invite only. All right, there's no opportunity to just find it, and it's not very easy to share outside the group. Okay. Which is why I've also, and I know that a lot of people hate this, is Facebook. Facebook, by the way, is it perfect? We know this, okay? But I have run pages and groups, and this is, so speaking to your personal brand versus the thing, the kind of tent you want everything housed under for what else you're creating, all right? Facebook pages/groups are really good for that. All right, because you can create a TTRPG creators resource group in Facebook. Mm-hmm. All right. And make yourself the admin. All right. You can, that gives you an opportunity to just find people, to just share what you see into other creator groups. Like, this is the map maker Facebook group. You just share it into there and some people will travel over. Okay. Cause you're a good overall resource. Okay. This is the dice makers group. So you just share whatever resource you have of like, hey, here is by Zach's webinar on TTRPG trends in 2024. Okay. He used search engine optimization. That is a resource that you can give to people, post in your group, then post to share into other groups. You're seeing, you don't post it directly in the group. You share from yours into others. They see who it was originally from. All right. Mm-hmm. And then they potentially, especially because these are people that this is the livelihood, this is the thing they're creating, they're really passionate. They don't act like a normal consumer. Okay. Mm-hmm. They do come over at higher rates. It's still not a flood. Okay. But it happens much easier than anything else. Okay. Mm-hmm. Similarly, you can just create, and I did this with D&D Unlimited. All right. I basically just post memes and screenshots into a group. All right. And I just entertain players.
Mm-hmm. All right?
Because those are people I'm interested in selling. I also have the Applewhite Games page versus Kaylin's personal page, because her personal brand goes beyond Applewhite Games, you know? And so that's why I do like Facebook, because it allows you to wear a lot of different masks, okay? Mm-hmm. There are people there looking for very different groups, okay? And especially in the TTRPG space, finding a good group that's not full of just toxic people that refer to themselves as alphas, all right, no, it, and that's well moderated, all right, that doesn't have, you know, just terrible content on it, that's, that can actually be interesting and have healthy conversation. I'll also say that as a moderator, if you've never been one before, the number one thing you need to watch for is the comment section of posts. Mm-hmm. And that always have a, like, for Facebook groups, a, in order to join, you need to answer this question. Okay. And be willing to say no to people who do not answer that question, or clearly just like, my question is, how did you learn about Dungeons and Dragons?
Mm.
All right. That's a simple question. All right. A lot of people learned about it in prison and in the military. Okay. If you didn't learn it from your brother or your neighbor, you learned it from the military or prison.
Oh my gosh.
In the statistics I've seen for the people, thousands of people who have answered mine, it's that. All right. But some of them will answer yes. Like, well, either you're a bot or you can't read, so I don't want you here. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Try again. You can always apply again. You can always try again. Okay. Mm-hmm. Nothing is stopping you from that. But it stops a lot of, I see a lot of groups right now get someone in there who is clearly just a bot, and they're posting completely unrelated stuff. Half of it's about sex. Okay. And the admins are not on top of it. So mm-hmm. I have to leave the entire group because that's not what I want in my feed. And no matter mm-hmm. how many times I say, I don't want to see this post, I don't want to see this post. Best case scenario, Facebook stops showing me anything from that group. Okay. Worst case scenario, I actively leave the group. Okay.
Yeah.
The comments section is also where I've had to play a heavy hand in. Frankly, what I do at this point is every year, twice a year, I post something that is mildly political, just mildly, that is basically there as a bait to the mm-hmm. terrible people, okay? That's basically just something simple like, hey, I don't care if you're gay, which shouldn't be a crazy statement in 2024. But for those three people who managed to squeeze into my group, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I remove them because they show their true colors. They say things inappropriate, and I remove them. And I treat my groups like my living room, and that's how I describe it to people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I don't care what side you sit on, okay? If you're threatening people, you can't be here.
Yeah.
All right. You can disagree with each other. All right. But if you're going to call someone the C word, I'm going to ask if you're Australian. Okay. Because they like to use that word, like we in America like to use the F word. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's an apostrophe to them. But if they're not Australian, they're immediately out. And if they are Australian, they are reminded of the local norms and customs. Okay. And asked very sternly not to use that word here. Okay. Or I'll have to remove them.
Yes. Right.
So,
anywhere to draw the line.
You have to be willing to be imperfect. That's the thing I actually had to swallow. All right. Because I also have rules for self promotion. And people are like, yeah, but what's self promotion? And I'm like, I know it when I see it. Like, if you have a link in your post, that's self promotion. If you say, by the way, hit me up in the messages if you want to know more, that's a little self promotion, but I might let it slide if you're good and you add other stuff to the community.
If you're
that's
genuine.
Not perfect. That I'm being a personal judge, and I might not be the same person on one day as I am on another. I try to be. If I feel like I'm not that kind of person, I pass the judgment until tomorrow. All right. But that's not a perfect system. And I have had to swallow that. All right. That I'm not going to get it right. That it's not black and white. And I'm not a robot. You know, that at the end of the day, that's why I go back to the living room. And I have to give myself a kind of mental state of, would I allow this to happen in my living room? How would I address this in my own home, but between two of my own friends? Okay. And that has been my guiding light to say, well, okay, no, Sharon here is talking way too much about the cookware sales program she's entered and how much she wants people to buy from it. Okay. Sharon's not getting invited back. All right. Which in Facebook group terms means, go somewhere else. I'm not banning you from Facebook, just this group. Okay. And I do that to protect the other members of the group, and they appreciate it. You know, so that's something, because you are going to get into community. Community 100%. Management requires a strong hand. It requires something in your mind that is, here are some of the boundaries. Some of them are obvious.
Yeah.
And some of them are subtle, you know, and, you know, God hoping you never have to be put in that position, but at least in America, I'm constantly put in that position.
That is not that far away. I see it definitely helping that your living room phrase, for example, gives you a solid foundation that you can call back upon for judgment. And I like that a lot.
It helps me with, because it's not an organization. There are things you let slide in a workplace that you don't let slide in your own living room. You know, someone's snide little comment might go by in a boardroom meeting, but in my living room, I'm going to ask, what do you mean by that, Carol? You know? Like, hey, John, it was a kind of not good thing to say. Do you want to correct yourself?
Yeah. You care more about the environment than the professionalism.
Right. And that's something where, when you're building a personal brand, you know, you are not just being yourself, because yourself is a broken, changing person. Okay. No, like, you can't build a business on that. You have to have this kind of identity. Instead of having an identity, I do have the identity. The identity is Zach's hosting a party in his living room.
Yeah. You have to be the host,
I'm the host. So I am both here to make sure everyone has a good time. I'm also the guardian. I'm the bouncer. Okay. It's just me. All right. And so that's what's helped me. The other thing, like, and this is a personal thing I found, is that stepping in with a video, if you can do this. All right, personal hack is, I have just lifted up my camera and said, hey, Tom, this is Zach. I'm the admin. I'm the sole creator of this group. All right. And here are my opinions on what you've said. Okay. Or what you've said so far isn't okay. if it continues, all right, it will not continue.
Yes.
You know? Now, the good news is that 9 times out of 10, people just won't respond to you. They will not respond anymore. They're done. 9 times out of 10, people are sad, lashing out, and forget that there's humans on the other side. Okay. And it takes a human face speaking with, I always try to approach it with, hey, I understand that this is the internet and it's easy to get heated. I understand that the other person wasn't perfect either. You know, I understand that it's hard to convey emotion over text, which is why I'm choosing to do this over video. Okay. And then I try and lay it out. Not everyone is as comfortable on video as I am. All right. So that might not be a good tool for you, but it is an option if it's something you're willing to explore. And you can always shoot the video and never send it, just like you can write a letter and never send it. You know, you can also save yourself the trouble and say, I don't get paid for this, which is a thing that people misconstrue in communities. They think that the admins are really getting something out of it. 9 times out of 10, it is just someone who cares about the community and with every hateful person who spits at them and says, hey, do your job, they become more bitter. And that's why so many groups fall apart on Facebook. They just kind of get abandoned
It
because it's
becomes a
not worth
job
the trouble.
instead of.
Exactly. It becomes a job that's not paid and is generally being operated for people who don't appreciate it. Or who appreciate it so passively that the only people, like, it's kind of a no news is good news thing. All right. I have 7,000 members in D&D Unlimited. All right.
Wow.
Maybe 100 of the maximum even know who I am. Okay. Because I only step in when something's wrong. I post in there all the time, but for all they know, like, I'm just a funny guy. Oh, he's an admin. Okay, he's just a funny guy. But people have regularly, one person was even like, this admin should be removed for being so rude. And I had to hop on, like, then the group's gone if I'm removed. Because it's me. You know, this is my house. Like this living room is mine. You know, that sounds really condescending, okay, but it's the truth. It's the truth of, like, this party doesn't happen unless I host it. If you want the party to happen, you go host it somewhere else. But the reason that people don't host parties is that it's messy, requires a lot of work. All right. And so I forget why I started on that tangent. So
That's okay. We were
I
talking about
don't know how to close it. All right. I guess point being is sometimes people suck. And when those people suck, I try to educate them. But there's a certain amount of sucking where it's not my job to educate you. You've had your chance. You're an adult. If you haven't figured out how to behave in society, I'm not your therapist. You know, I have kids. I don't need any more. You know, and I have said that line to people where they're like, well, then explain it to me. And I'm like, Google it. I'm not your daddy. I got two people in my house that call me daddy. All right. They're 4 and 7 years
Don't
old. All right. I don't need any more. You're an adult. Go figure yourself out. Come back when you learn how to behave like one. All
more.
right. And so that's something not everyone's up for. All right. We got time for one more question.
Okay. Yes, I understand. Speaking of kids,
I'm sorry I went on tangents. Go ahead.
last note on community building before we wrap up, and thanks again for being on here with me, especially for longer than our allotted time.
All good.
But you mentioned specifically in the Tabletop Business Masterminds Discord recently about building out a community and starting small. Any more thoughts on trying to establish a community when you don't have one yet? Like starting from scratch?
I think you're already doing that is the good news, because you're told me that you're reaching out to people. Okay. And this actually, that post came from listening to a very similar podcast where someone made the very good point of they think that when you invite people into a community, it all needs to be set up like a whole community. And that a lot of people want to inflate the size of the community because otherwise it doesn't feel important enough to be a part of. Okay. The truth is to be honest about what it is. Okay. And to say it's kind of treat it like a startup. All right. If you start a startup and it's you and a guy in a basement, all right, you cannot say and you cannot behave like you're Apple. All right. You have to be honest and say, look, we're gritty. All right. You're not always going to get the perfect thing, but sometimes you'll get the way better thing. And we're also going to give, you're going to talk to the creator, not some random person in an offshore employment agency.
Yeah.
It's hired by a corporation. Okay. You're going to get to talk to me. That's the thing that I get to do for the Tabletop Business Masterminds. Is that they get to talk to me. All right. I'm the biggest value add in that community because I'm the one constantly upkeeping it. And when I launched it, I had, I think, 5 or 6 hashtags. I've added a couple more on, but I go into other communities that have 100 people in it and have 30 of those hashtag group community little thingies. All right. And it's overwhelming for me. I just got to know this community. And then if I go into any of those, most of them are barren. Okay? So when I say start small, you're doing it. Go ahead and create a community, invite people to it. All right. You're going to walk before you run. You're going to toddle before you walk. You're going to crawl before you toddle. All right. Give yourself the freedom to not be perfect out the gate, to not have a whole thriving community out the gate. Give yourself permission to grow, all right, both as a community and as a brand and as a person, okay, so that you can figure things out and no one's going to hold you accountable like your Apple, okay, because you'll have been honest with who you are. And then, by the way, your growth, if you pretend you're Apple and you sit and you grow as a person, as a corporation, no one takes notice because you're still not Apple. Okay? If anything, it looks like a failure because you're not the thing that you proposed yourself to be. Okay.
Right.
When you're small, when you take your first steps, everyone freaks out. They're like, God, he's doing it. You know? And so by being honest and being a true self and saying like, look, this community is 10 people. Every now and then I'm just going to come in and I'm going to say things, or, hey, I'm trying to hold myself accountable to post once a month about something in the community. And if you have questions, please ask. I would love to hear everyone's opinion. Or I'm going to ask a question every week, you know, for the community, so that we can help each other. You know, that's the kind of thing. And if it's just 10 people, and by the way, invite some, ask every now and then, hey, invite somebody that you think might be interested. Then when you host events, there's a few core key community members that if you host that charity event and you say, by the way, all the creators, thank you so much for being part of this charity event. If you want to join my creator community, all right, come on over. It's small, but it's growing and it's people just like you. That's compelling. And there will be people there to say hi. And it's not going to be randos that you asked on Reddit. It's going to be the 10 people that you know personally.
Yeah.
And they're going to be a way better introduction than like in a Facebook group where it's everybody. And that's terrifying. You know?
Awesome. I think that's very valuable advice. Yes.
All right. Awesome. We're going to have to end it there.
Yeah.
I want to give you an opportunity. Where can people find you? And if you have anything that, I know you don't have anything like on Patreon that they could buy right now, do you? But if you have anything, if you have a place you want people to go, where can they find you?
Right. So obviously, I'm just starting out on this project and several things. If anybody is listening to this and interested in finding out more, feel free to shoot me a message on Discord, IntrepidTraveler03. Or I'm starting to work on this project on Instagram. So rollspark.project is where you can find that. And then yeah, I am on Patreon and Kickstarter as well as RollSpark RPG. Thanks for having me, Zach. It's lovely talking with you. You have some great insights. I look forward to keeping you updated on how things evolve from here.
Awesome. And of course, make sure you invite me into that community. I'll be one of those 10 people for sure.
Thanks, Zach. I will do. I will do
that. Awesome. Have a great day. I'll talk to you another time.
Thanks. Cheers.
Cheers.